Any puns are accidental.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our returning guest is Joseph Scrimshaw. He's with us to talk about taking inspiration from pop culture, especially in times like we're experiencing now.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hi.
And Tim Wick.
Hello.
And we are joined today by one of our favorite guests, friend of the show, Joseph Scrimshaw.
Hello. Hello.
Excellent.
Oh, he's got a beer.
We usually can only record with you at Convergence, which sadly is not happening this year, but Mm-mm. Through the magic of Zoom technology, we are able to have you on the show anytime.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Yeah. And you have wine. And Nick, what did you have? You had a large bottle of water?
Just straight up mm-hmm. water today.
Yeah. Nice.
I believe Tim is drinking smoked almonds.
I have salt and vinegar almonds from Blue Diamond.
Salt and vinegar almonds.
Mm-hmm. All right. Great for in the desert.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And what are you drinking, Joseph?
It is a Hoegaarden.
Ooh, nice. Like a Witbier.
Yes, it's a Witbier. Yes, in a Herkimer glass to commemorate yet another thing closing.
The Herkimer. My goodness. Well, we had several topics we thought about doing today that were all a little more sad than the one we're going to go with about things being canceled and not being able to do stuff. But instead, we're going to talk about when stories and media actually help you cope with life. And this is something that I find, this is something I actually deal with in my work a lot, that we've been actually talking about this, is when our gameplay experiences, and whether it's important to make sure that they avoid sensitive topics so that players aren't put in those positions to feel like they are reliving uncomfortable moments, or if it's important to keep them in. And I'll talk more about that later. But Joseph, this is your topic idea. What were you thinking when you came up with this? What kinds of things are you thinking help you cope with life?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a concept I've been thinking about for a while. It kind of started as a joke in my mind of like, if I'm going to watch and read this much, I should be getting something immensely practical out of it. And for a little while, when Bill Corbett, our friend, was doing his podcast, I was sending in little pop culture teachings, and part of them were, they were kind of jokey, but they were also trying to be like actually philosophical to life. But a lot of what it's come from is inspirations from lots of different pop culture. But I spend a lot of time with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. We've got the podcast Force Center that Molly has been a wonderful guest on. You're great. Yeah, so my friend Ken and I do about 4 episodes a week. So it's a lot of Star Wars time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So yeah, I don't think anybody is a better fan. I think people are different fans. And I think I feel it in a specific way because I spend so much time thinking about the underlying themes. And those have really helped me in very, very practical life things. Just kind of general Jedi philosophy of absolutely lead with empathy. Absolutely try to de-escalate as much as possible until there is a point at which something is unacceptable and then you have to act. Mm-hmm. And those things have really helped me just de-escalating actual life fights, and really helped me a lot on social media, trying to decide how I want to handle the few trolls that I end up interacting with. And
yeah.
I usually try to just say like, hey, this is why that's not okay, what you just said about that politician.
Yeah,
I know you follow me because you like jokes and we like the same thing. But if you say that again, I'm really going to have to reconsider whether or not you can follow me. And I always offer people, you can unfollow me. And I went through that whole process and got to that point where that kind of Star Wars march of like a verbal warning. You might need to cut off just your hand. But then you will not relent and you just want to lead with hate and actively mm-hmm. choose to put your hate on my feed. So then we go to the block button, the old fatal lightsaber move, the block button of social media.
Yes.
Cut them in half. I'm always amazed by the number of guys, and it's always guys, online that like have some form of Jedi in their handle or in their bio, but are monsters like who are like in their handle. It's like, I follow the way of Jedi, but then they're like, Emmeline Holdo's a fucking Mary Sue and I hope she dies. And it's like, oh, okay. Like it's pretty sure
that's Jedi,
not, right? Like,
yeah, there's a lot of people who love the concept of the gray Jedi who pulls from the light and the dark. And like, that's always a reason to be like, I'm a peaceful Jedi, except for when I'm mad, then I can be a dick because, yeah, you know, balance. Like, that's not the philosophy.
That's not the balance. That's not
it's the people that in Dungeons and Dragons make their characters chaotic neutral so that they can do what they want. That's what they want. To just no justification. I just want to do what I want.
Yes. I'm just totally sitting on this fence telling everybody.
I read a lot of books, a lot of, especially what I call murder books, the books where people, usually women, are getting murdered. And I know, I understand how this makes me sound. But for me, it is a kind of escape in the sense that that has always been something I've been a little bit afraid of. Since I was a little kid, I've been like kind of afraid of getting kidnapped and murdered. And reading about it for some reason, ever since I was quite young, has been a way to almost be less afraid of it, because I feel like now I've got all of this like advice. Like I know all the tricks, you know, like I read all these books and I know which women live and which ones don't. And I feel like I got a lot of like, I especially like there's a book I'm reading now where the protagonist is like, she gets kidnapped as a young girl. She manages to live, but she told everyone that she got in the van because the guy had kittens and he tricked her. But it turns out that's not even what happened. She just got in the van because she felt like it. But that was so embarrassing that she came up with the kitten story, you know? And so like things like that, it's just weird little things like, I don't know, for some reason that helps me cope with this irrational fear to some degree of being stranger kidnapped and attacked.
I think that's such a great example, because I think we can pull examples of heroism, of how to like try to be our best selves. But I think it's great to see people with flaws in a story, too. That's like such a human story, right? To say, I don't want to admit that I did this thing that, you know, I'm not is, you know, from a certain point of view, stupid, but from an honest point of view, just human.
It is.
Yeah, it's just, I did a thing I wanted to do and it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah. I made a decision in the moment. Maybe I didn't think it through, but there we are.
Yeah.
Bad decision. Yes.
A lot of people right now have been referencing Zootopia in terms of the police state and the situation with the police about how, you know, in Zootopia, Judy is a cop, but she turns in her badge and stops being a cop when she realizes she cannot defeat the corruption in the force, really, right?
Like the racial prejudice.
And people are saying, like, you know, that's a good example. We should have more cops quitting. But I think that's a really interesting example of people looking to something that you don't usually think, you know, oh, this Pixar movie is a great way of discussing the military police state in which we find ourselves. But here we are. Are there any non-Star Wars media or stories that you find yourself turning to lately?
Oh yeah, yeah. I think you can probably see, those of you who are watching on Zoom, Captain America behind me, good old Steve Rogers, Chris Evans. I love the characterization of him in the MCU in particular, because he is this archetype of the steadfast character who, he learns things and he adapts, but in general, we meet him and he's a pretty great person. And then he's challenged to not be a great person. And then at the end of every one of his stories, he's like, hey, I'm still a great person.
Yeah.
So he's steadfast. But so many of our stories are about the heroes preserving the status quo. The villain wants to change something. Mm-hmm. And that can be kind of a slippery slope of storytelling, because then we just kind of get it internalized that nothing should ever change. Mm-hmm. And Captain America in the MCU flips that on its head, where he never truly changes. And he is constantly changing the status quo around him, where he's like, no, I don't want to be a dancing person, you know, who just pretend punches out Hitler. I want to actually do something. And no, I don't want to just work with S.H.I.E.L.D. The S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of sucks. He pulls a Judy the Rabbit cop, right?
He did. Yeah, he did.
He did.
Yeah. So
in an elevator, no less.
Yes, I would like to see those characters do a mashup fight in the elevator. That'd be great.
I think Judy Hopp could do some serious damage in an elevator.
Absolutely.
I mean, does she have a gun? Because I've seen cops with guns. They're really good at it. sorry, it's been a day. Tim, Nick, what about you guys? What kinds of stories help you cope, or does that not help you?
So this one thing sticks out in my mind, and that's when you're a kid and you can like overhear the adults talking, and you know they're talking about you, and so you kind of listen and you know pick up on what they're putting out there, and it might kind of like cement itself in your head a little bit. My grandparents, I remember hearing them when I was like 14 or 15, express their concern to my mom that I was maybe too much escapism in my media. Like, this is a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, always wanted to talk about video games or comic books, and not a lot has changed in that regard. But I don't think that they maybe realized that that's also how I found my friends. That's how I found my social circle. That's how I found my wife. I mean, if it weren't for LAN parties and trying to figure out what I needed for a graphics card to play Quake or whatever with friends, like I literally wouldn't have the career I have today in network engineering, because the whole reason I know how to do what I do is because we had to figure out how to get our shit mm-hmm. together to play video games together. So, mm-hmm. In that way, the fiction that I like has helped me cope, because it's helped me find a community and it's helped me develop skills. And mm-hmm. I don't know. That's weird. I hear people say this a lot, like when they first go to Convergence or maybe Dragon Con or whatever their big favorite convention is. There's this feeling after you kind of the initial wow of it all sets in where you're like, oh shit, I found my people.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. that's awesome. That's everyone should be able to have that feeling.
Here's 6,000 people who all agree that escapism is good and isn't just escaping, but this is 6,000 people who all are here because they love stories. You know, they love, there's something about a story that they love.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think it's sometimes from my experience in conventions, people are so there for community and for parties. And maybe you'll talk about the actual media and stories a little bit on panels, but I've gotten frustrated at some conventions recently. It's like, will anyone here talk to me about Star Trek? Because everybody's too busy having a party, making jokes. Nobody wants to talk about Star Trek.
I'm so tired of playing three-dimensional chess. Let's just... Can we talk Definitely. About Spock's brain, please?
Of all the episodes, Tim.
That's like Tim, the comedy one, right? You have the drop down menu of which is the funniest Star Trek episode, and you go to Spock's brain,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Well, and I think too that there's, you know, there are. So we read Chuck Wendig's Wanderers, around late last year, and it is a book about a plague that hits and affects a certain number of people. And then this weird thing happens where they kind of become, they just start walking, and it's like they're unconscious, but they're walking. And it goes into a lot of other things, but you know, but I that was a story that at the time I was like, oh boy, this is a post-apocalyptic kind of stuff. This feels like near futurism. This isn't anything real. And there's been so much that's happened since that feels right on up to the right wing white supremacist militia groups trying to take over the government. Yeah.
and like people crying fake news about the virus spread and blaming governments for releasing it. And like, it's a book I would love to recommend to people more often, but I'm not really recommending it to people right now.
But having read
it's a little too real.
As it was happening, I felt like we had this language between the two of us that we could be like, I mean, it's even a disease that starts with bats, for God's sake. So it's like, we kind of had this whole like, oh my God, are we going to, this is, you know, so I think it's not just that it maybe helps cope, but coping sometimes can involve other people, and the ability to have that almost secret language with someone else who's read your thing Like you guys just now were doing it, you know, with the Spock's brain episode. And anyone who hasn't seen it is kind of like, huh? But everyone else is like, these guys, you know? And so I think stories, they knit us together in a way that give us a community just from having experienced the same narrative, which is kind of interesting.
Do you think that a book like Wanderers, where these themes that are a little bit uncomfortably relevant to our current situation, do you think seeing those things in the book or in reading about them maybe made it easier when the things that were similar were actually happening? Like it was less of a shock to your system.
I can see that.
Because you had been reading about something similar.
Yeah.
Like if you...
I can see that.
Yeah. A spoiler.
Kind of like my murder preparations.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of like deja vu.
Yeah, I think sometimes, especially if you started young with anything sci-fi, fantasy in particular, it can feel so heightened, right? And you never feel like you're actually going to be the one who gets the magic sword and defeats the dark dragon man at the castle. Like, it feels so heightened. But then you find those moments as an adult where it just suddenly don't feel heightened at all. You're just like, that's it. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
There's a specific moment in Rogue One. I think Rogue One is a great activism movie, and I'm not currently calling for actual physical violence because somebody else accused me of that when I was talking about this. But when Jyn goes to, well, it's just the whole march to the rebellion, accepting that it's got to a point where they truly have no choice but to accept absolute tyranny or to fight. Like, Jyn's original mission is go find your dad so we can bring him before the Senate to testify.
Yeah.
No, that's not really gonna work with Palpatine, right? Darth Sidious isn't gonna be like, oh, you caught me, my bad.
Impeached.
I will accept it willingly.
Yes. Yeah.
And you get to the point where Jyn is making the case to the actual Rebel Alliance, the people who spent a bunch of time and money to organize in secret against the Empire, and it's just too terrible for them to imagine. There's one senator, there are three senators who fight against it, but the whiniest one is named Noor Jebel, and he's the one who says, a Death Star? This is nonsense! And you're watching the movie with years of Star Wars knowledge, and like, you idiot. Then you take a step back, and it's like totally relatable. Like, how much do we want to be able to go with any number of things, with racial injustice, with the virus, with authoritarianism? You want to be Noor Jebel, right? You just want to be like, it can't be that bad. Mm-hmm. We don't have to, you know, sacrifice a lot and do scary things, do we? And, you know.
Molly, why are you putting up all those posters at work about washing your hands? That seems all right. Everyone knows they need to wash their hands. It's fine. Calm down.
Yeah, it's fine. Calm down. I think there's a lot in our stories that reminds me of like, no, you know, sometimes the heroes are really right. And that's another way to kind of connect to heroism. Absolutely. Just in a simple way of just saying like, no, this is happening. It's real.
I think the stories that connect to me in this kind of thing I appreciate stories with happy endings. I know that, I understand that that's not the way real life works all the time, but that's why I like a story that has a happy ending a lot of the time, because I know that's not the way real life works. But there's that activist nature to most of those stories. There's the, you have to do something in order to make it stop. In order to get through whatever situation it is. And so that's the kind of media that for me tends to have more of an impact right now, is to be able to go back and watch Star Wars and go, you know what? They did a really lot of really crazy, dumb stuff, but it was all because they knew that they couldn't do nothing.
Yeah.
Right. They had to do the crazy dumb stuff, and even the prequels, as much as I feel like they don't succeed as storytelling, aren't they really ultimately about how a whole bunch of people are not doing the right thing
at a time
when they needed to act, and they kind of were complacent and just sort of let it wash over them? And at the end of Attack of the Clones, when Yoda says, you know, begun this, the Clone War has, it doesn't seem like he's doing anything to stop it from happening from that point on. And he clearly knows that that wasn't a good thing without ever making the necessary step to, well, how do I find what's causing this and end it? Or he certainly doesn't seem to. And I think that Rogue One is, and I think it's a fantastic film. I mean, it might arguably be my favorite Star Wars film, depending on the day, because everybody dies in that sad spoilers. But it is a story of people recognizing that they can't just stand by and do nothing.
Well, I would even argue that in the prequels, Anakin is the one who says this far and no further. Yeah. You know, he's the one that's like, no, you know what? No, like attacking my mom, killing my mom. That's it. I got to do something. I got to find a way to prevent this kind of stuff. Like I need to take action. And unfortunately his action is to turn to the dark side, but you know, and to some degree that's his personal line where he decides that just sitting by and waiting for something else to happen isn't going to work anymore. So something we talk about at work is this idea of forcing people, generally, like, you know, people who identify as queer, people who are people of color, forcing them to relive traumatic things as a part of someone's narrative experience, right? So maybe you have, if you have a Black character and it's all about how, you know, let's say in Arkham, there's a Black character in Arkham named Rita, she's been, and a lot of her backstory is like racists hate her, right? Like that's just part of her backstory. Oh, it's real hard because there's so many white racists. And we've had a lot of conversations about, like, is that an experience somebody wants to sit down at the table and play if they're a person of color, to basically have it be like, oh, your experience is shaped by trauma. This white person had a great time. She's just looking for her sister, you know, like it's, and so a lot of the times, you know, we talk about what's cathartic versus what is almost like trauma porn in a way. Mm. And so I was wondering, are there any stories that for you personally, and if you don't want to get too personal, that's fine, but anything where you're like, I don't like this. Like, I don't enjoy reliving or sitting through this kind of story. This does not help me cope.
Yeah. I mean,
anyone. Yeah.
I mean, for myself, I want to be careful about the way I say this. I have not been the victim of any sexual assault. I was mm-hmm. certainly bullied, and I've certainly had moments where someone physically took my control away from me. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really careful about anything I watch that has assault, because I don't want to put myself through that mm-hmm. unless I know I'm going to really get something of value out of it. So that's a thing that I'm cautious about, particularly with depictions. Like, I think I'm sure you discuss this at your work a ton of what is that balance between we want to give people escapism, let's not traumatize people, versus let's not pretend these things aren't happening and aren't a part of somebody's truth, right?
Exactly.
So that's the thing that I wrestle with. I think my wife and I watch Outlander. We really enjoy Outlander.
It's a good answer. Yeah.
There's a lot going on in Outlander. There is, I'm trying not to be too spoilery. There is early on, there's some assault from a different perspective. And I thought it was really hard to watch, but I thought it was healthy because I learned something and it helped me think through culture. And there's been other instances where it's just sort of like, I get it.
More gratuitous.
But it feels to me, and this is just totally a personal thing, everybody else's opinion is equally, if not more valid than mine on this one, that it's just like, this feels like a twist in the story, and I don't want that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I for me, a lot of times I have a hard time even reading books, but where a character, like I had several boyfriends, but one for a long time who was very verbally and emotionally abusive. So like anytime that there's like a book, I just read one recently where the one of the characters, her husband was very emotionally abusive and verbally abusive, but no one believed her. And I wasn't expecting to feel so like, God damn it, I will save you, book lady. Like, I will, like, who do I have to call? What is the book phone number that I need to like work on? But yeah, that is something that I don't want to use the word triggered, because I didn't experience a trauma with that, but it definitely brings up uncomfortable feelings that I don't feel like, oh, this is fun. I'm coping with this. It makes me think more like, oh, gross. Like, this just makes me feel gross. Like I did then, you know?
Yeah. 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 I think for me that, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, sure. For me, you know, and again, I haven't experienced a lot of trauma in my life. Probably the most traumatic thing was my dad dying suddenly when I was young. And that actually means that just about any movie that has to do with a child losing a father really does not go over well with me.
It doesn't help you cope. It just kind of makes you relive it.
It makes me relive. I mean, Big Fish is a movie that I can't, I watched that once and it just kind of wrecked me. And it's like, unless I want to be wrecked again, I can't watch it. And Onward, the latest Pixar film, actually is the same kind of themes. And I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm saying it's bad for me.
Yeah.
Did you watch Onward?
I did.
And you knew what you were getting yourself into, right?
I did know to some extent, but I never know, especially with Pixar, the way they frequently will disguise the story that they're telling when they're showing previews and stuff like that. I didn't know how deep it was going to go into that kind of experience. I was still going to watch it. It does mean I probably will not watch it very soon, if ever, again.
I really something that'll take me out of a story or kind of like, I don't know, taint whatever I'm enjoying a bit is really casual cruelty to people who are fat. That is like nothing to do with the story and doesn't add to anyone's character, like whether it's it'll often be like not even a protagonist, because often there aren't a lot of like fun protagonists that are, you know, overweight folks really. Unless it's their trope, right? But it'll be like,
so it's the fat friend.
There's someone at the inn and it's like, oh, this greedy guy, this fat greedy guy.
He's hungry all the time and so greedy. Fat. Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, it's so fucking, like, I hate it on a personal level, but then also, like, I don't like it because it's so fucking lazy.
Yeah.
In terms of writing, like, it's just like, you couldn't come up with literally anything else other than this tired fucking character.
It could be the exact same thing, but he could be really skinny and it would make more sense.
Like the one overweight character in Star Wars is Porkins.
Jabba. And those are the two.
Often it's just such a casual thing that I'm sure most people just read it and it doesn't even stick out to them at all. But like, I don't know, always sticks out to me a little bit.
I think, and there's something that I was discussing with my coworker, Cara, is we talked about how sometimes these stories can be something that can almost help you work through a trauma in a way. She gave the example of Tangled, which I very much felt similar to if you've ever had a controlling parent, specifically a mother-daughter relationship with someone who is very controlling or narcissistic or, you know, just very demanding, and how watching that movie and seeing her get gaslit by her mother, you know, for some people might be like, you know, they couldn't do it, similar to, you know, Tim with Onward, but for others might be like, you know what, actually, this is, I know that bitch is going to get what's coming to her. Let's watch. Like, it's definitely a balancing act, I think, with helping what will help you cope and what will actually make you relive it with no coping.
I think that could be validating, because they're showing this example and they're making it very clear that the mom is the villain and what she's doing is bad.
Yeah.
And the protagonist is being harmed in this way by these actions.
And she's freeing herself from said things. Yeah.
If it were the same like abusive and narcissistic behavior, but it didn't have any relevance to the plot or the story, or it wasn't resolved. Mm-hmm. It was just, there's just this woman who's really cruel.
Yeah.
Like that might not have the same value.
I get that. Well, this is great. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking about this with all of you. So thanks for sharing your personal feelings about Story Media. But it is time for five questions.
Oh boy. Five questions.
Are you ready for five questions? Joseph, you've answered our five questions countless times. We've had you on so many times. And so we thought that we have a really fun set of five questions from one of our Patreon supporters, Jennifer Jordan. And I think this would be a fun one for all of us to answer. Are you guys ready?
Let's do this thing.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a preamble.
All right.
Okay.
You are now traveling in deep space. You have advanced technology and access to natural phenomena like sci-fi wormholes that allow you to travel across any galaxy in short periods of time. Fictional and non-fictional people, places, and concepts are all acceptable when answering these five questions. Question one.
All right.
Why are you in space?
Are we starting with me?
You can just jump in. Yeah. We'll start with Joseph. Why are you in space, Joseph?
I am leaving the Earth for obvious reasons.
All right. I am an accidental stowaway because I got too curious at the Kennedy Space Center.
I'm thinking it's just 9 to 5, right? Mm-hmm. Like the first 15 or 20 minutes of Alien.
Like the Elton John song, Rocket Man. It's just your job five days a week.
Man, I don't know any science stuff. I just fly the rockets.
All right, Tim?
Basically, I've always wanted to go to space. So the fact that I can, I'm in.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Question
space
two.
For its own sake.
Question two. What kind of vessel are you on, Joseph?
Ooh, I would like to be on like a space cruise ship. That is full of just a sort of odd, questionable art and a large cross-section of different kinds of humanity and aliens who are forced to mingle together with random dinner assignments, because then I'll have to get to know them.
Yeah. I would like to be on Dryden Voss's ship, First Light, because I find it to be hilarious. It's like a skyscraper that just goes through space. And it was also somehow at the Kennedy Space Center. We don't need to talk about how it was there. And then I got on and now here we are. Nick.
It's an ice hauler. It's built for neither speed nor comfort. The ship's been through so many repairs that probably only about 5 to 10% of the original ship is there.
Okay. All right. Tim.
Yeah, I think I would want to be on the Heart of Gold because basically what the Heart of Gold says is that space is a dangerous place, but it's also kind of funny.
And
that humor is what can get you through the danger. I think that's the way I like
that. Oh, fine. All right. Question three. Who is on crew of this vessel and what is your role? Joseph.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Well, if I put myself on a cruise ship, I'll do stand up. It'll be a rough gig. Really, really rough gig.
All you got to do is tell stories about how small the showers are, Joseph. I've been on cruise ships. That's 90% of the comedy material.
HBO's, is it Avenue 6?
Avenue 5.
The HBO show Avenue 5, where they are on like a space cruise ship that gets off course and is going to be there for like longer than they anticipated. And there is a single stand-up comedian who's supposed to play every night. And he is a character with immense pathos. And it is really great.
I'll lean into sad clown. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, that's great. All right. I would say this is crewed by my ship is crewed by a ragtag bunch of ne'er-do-wells who are also caterers. They started their own catering company and they took over a ship, and I'm the new caterer. It's like party down where it's my first day and everyone else knows where the shirts are and which trays to polish.
I think the ship I'm on is crewed by, you know, a lot of people have their reasons and a lot of those reasons are private. Some people are, you know, everybody's running from something.
I like that.
And I'm a scrappy engineer type.
Engineer?
Yeah. Maybe quartermaster. I don't know.
Okay.
Engineer.
Tim?
Well, I think the thing is that being on the Heart of Gold, basically the crew that I'm with would change every time you activated the infinite improbability drive.
That's true.
With the exception of the person who activates the infinite improbability drive. So that would need to be me. So I wouldn't not be on the ship. That's my role.
You're the drive master.
Yeah, I'm the drive master.
All right, question four. How do you spend your free time in space?
Oh, yeah, that's real easy because I've been on a cruise ship before. So I would eat. I would take naps with my wife. And then, well, it's kind of always night in space, but at nighttime on the cruise ship, the space cruise ship, I would go to the back and stare out at the nothingness of space and think, this is both beautiful and makes me think about how insignificant and fragile I am. Isn't it fun?
That's good.
Sounds great.
I'm gonna learn how to play what's that instrument in Futurama, the horn that makes beautiful pictures?
The holophoner.
I'm gonna learn how to play the holophoner in my spare time. I used to play the saxophone in fifth grade, so I feel like I got this. It'll be good. It'll be good. Nick?
Like spending my company store credits to enjoy a good sonic shower. There's probably like a zero G rec center type area that probably gets some use.
Some resistance bands.
Yeah. Or cryo sleep.
Oh, sure.
Just pass some time.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. All right. Tim.
You know, I feel like being on the Heart of Gold, I would probably just be like going to every weird ass place in the universe and checking it out. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of spare time. I mean, most of your spare time is adjusting to everything that changed the last time you used the infinite improbability drive. Sure. So, and probably getting to know the new crew members, that would probably take up a lot of time.
How to pronounce their lizard names, et cetera.
Yeah. Those sorts of things. I think that would pretty much be all my free time. Yeah.
All right. And finally, question five. Do you ever intend to return to your home planet if you have one? Joseph, are you coming back?
I would like to go on a desperate odyssey to return to Earth and never actually make it.
Like that. I think I'm done. I'm on my way to points unknown, and all my bags are packed. I said goodbye to everybody. I made sure that I brought my cats and dog with me, so we're fine. Yeah.
I think that despite there being a good, faster than light travel option due to for some reason, let's just say relativity is still an issue. So I don't know if I'd want to go back to Earth because so much time would pass that none of it would really be relevant.
Sure.
You know?
All right.
Yeah.
Tim?
I feel like I left for a reason. I feel like there's nothing really holding me to that place anymore. And that if I returned, it would probably just be because the infinite improbability drive is a son of a bitch. And was like, well, I guess guess we're bringing you home for a little while. But it certainly wouldn't be intentional.
All right.
It's almost like a TARDIS-like situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it might bring you back.
Jennifer, I hope that we satisfied your space fantasy curiosity there with our very, very, very technical, highly probable answers. Joseph, thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything, do you have anything going on online, or how are you, what are you doing these days, comedy-wise?
Why are you alive?
People can find you, your Force Center podcast.
Yeah, so Force Center, and then I'm still doing my Obsessed podcast. I'm doing that with my wife, Sarah, every week, so that's great. Got a lot of different writing projects and different stages of pitching and shopping, so that's keeping me busy. And you can always check out the Adult Swim show that I work on, Tigtone. You can watch the whole first season on adultswim.com/Tigtone, okay. And then second season soon.
Oh, yay! That's great. Tigtone is hilarious. Like, I'm just gonna tell you, if you have any interest in subversive animation kinds of shows, which is a big thing that we love, Tigtone's fucking great. Yeah.
It's out there. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, thank you so much. If you guys want to give us your five questions, we would love to answer them. Send them to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. If you're a Patreon supporter, you get bumped into the Patreon queue, and we would love to hear from you. Make sure you say in the subject line you're a Patreon supporter, because otherwise I tend to miss things. Like, Jennifer should have gone a little sooner, but I missed it because she buried the lead. Jennifer, geez. But otherwise, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and as always, we will see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Honestly, my biggest takeaway from Star Wars is this unhealthy fear that Donald Trump is actually my father.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize more. moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
The cat, here's my butthole.